Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser. In the last podcast, I read a letter announcing Christ's return. I haven't gotten any response yet, but I suspect some people would like some proof, even though the language of the letter was pretty good proof in itself. Fortunately for me, I don't have to go far to find a proof. Baha'u'llah himself was asked the same question, and he wrote this book called The Book of Certitude. In this podcast, I'll read a few excerpts from the book and comment on them. The first thing he asks us to do is to sanctify our souls from earthly things and heavenly expectations, to put our trust in God. It's no small task. Here's his words. They that tread the path of faith, they that thirst for the wine of certitude, must cleanse themselves of all that is earthly, their ears from idle talk, their minds from vain imaginings, their hearts from worldly affections, their eyes from that which perisheth. They should put their trust in God and, holding fast unto Him, follow in His way. Then will they be made worthy of the effulgent glories of the Sun of divine knowledge and understanding, and become the recipients of a grace that is infinite and unseen, inasmuch as man can never hope to attain unto the knowledge of the All-Glorious, can never quaff from the stream of divine knowledge and wisdom, can never enter the abode of immortality, nor partake of the cup of divine nearness and favor, unless and until he ceases to regard the words and deeds of mortal men as a standard for the true understanding and recognition of God and his prophets. I'm going to repeat that last phrase. Unless and until he ceases to regard the words and deeds of mortal men as a standard for the true understanding and recognition of God and his prophets. So God is asking us to do something quite difficult, to be detached, to trust in God, and to stop using the words and actions of people as a standard for understanding God. Ask yourself, what standard Peter used when he recognized Jesus as the Messiah? Next, Baha'u'llah reminds us that every time a messenger of God comes, people fail to recognize him. You know that was true with Jesus 2,000 years ago, and it's true today with his return. He slipped through our lives like a thief in the night, and we failed to recognize him because we were expecting something different. Not only did mankind fail to recognize each messenger, but the people generally killed them, banished them, or somehow abused them. In the Book of Certitude, Baha'u'llah recounts the stories of Noah, Abraham, and Moses. Then he talks about the reasons for the people's denial and abuse in these words. Such behavior can be attributed to naught save the petty-mindedness of such souls as tread the valley of arrogance and pride, are lost in the wilds of remoteness, walk in the ways of their idle fancy, and follow the dictates of the leaders of their faith. Their chief concern is mere opposition. Their sole desire is to ignore the truth. Unto every discerning observer, it is evident and manifest that had these people, in the days of each of the manifestations of the Son of Truth, sanctified their eyes, their ears, and their hearts from whatever they had seen, heard, and felt, they surely would not have been deprived of beholding the beauty of God, nor strayed far from the habitations of glory. But having weighed the testimony of God by the standard of their own knowledge, gleaned from the teachings of the leaders of their faith, and found it at variance with their limited understanding, they arose to perpetrate such unseemly acts. So a big problem is the limited understanding of the clergy. Going back to the book, leaders of religion in every age have hindered their people from attaining the shores of eternal salvation, inasmuch as they held the reins of authority in their mighty grasp. Some for the lust of leadership, others through want of knowledge and understanding, have been the cause of the deprivation of the people. by their sanction and authority, every prophet of God hath drunk from the chalice of sacrifice and winged his flight unto the heights of glory. Now let's stop a second and talk about the nature of proofs. I realize that none of this so far is what you might call a proof. So far, he's just saying to look at his message with a pure heart and don't be confused by what you hear from the clergy. So let's consider this question. What are the acceptable proofs of a messenger of God? One proof is his own self. If you had seen the glory of God in person, as one governor of Israel did, you might have jumped out of your chair and bowed to the waist, remaining in that position until Baha'u'llah left the area. After that, the governor turned to his companion and asked, "Was that the Lord of hosts?" A second proof, in this case, is his family. Once Baha'u'llah was having tea with a Muslim clergyman who was not aware of Baha'u'llah's claim to be the Promised One. As Baha'u'llah's 7-year-old daughter poured the tea, the clergyman said, "I can assume that you are a messenger of God by the way your daughter pours our tea." Her older brother became such a saintly character that the author of the prophet Khalil Gibran believed that her brother was the return of Christ. This brother, who the Baha'is call the servant of the glory, or Abdu'l-Bahá, considered himself to be beneath the station of ordinary people. He was humility itself. But the greatest proof, and the only one that's available to us today, is the text of Baha'u'llah's writings. The power and authority that streamed from that uneducated man who never went to school. The words coming so fast that it took the fastest secretaries to record them is its own proof. Let's look at this idea of using his words as their own proof. On the surface, this is ridiculous. If I assume the sky is green, I can't use that assumption to prove that the sky is green. So this is not a normal scientific proof. Let's look at a more familiar situation. What if I were a Jew and I came to you saying, "Prove to me that Jesus of Nazareth is my Messiah"? What would you say to me? Would you tell me of the Old Testament prophecies? If you did, I would say to you that these prophecies don't point to Jesus. In fact, they prove that he wasn't the Messiah. I would say to you that Jesus wasn't a mighty king. He didn't sit on the throne of David, nor did he destroy the enemies of Israel. He didn't gather the Jews together. In fact, the Jews were scattered afterwards. Perhaps you would instead offer Jesus' words in the New Testament. You'd be offering me the same proof that was sufficient to the fisherman Peter and the other apostles. I suggest that today that Jesus' words are one proof. Baha'u'llah says of the gospel, this is a quote, he says, "The words of the verses themselves eloquently testify to the truth that they are of God." And Baha'u'llah goes on to say that another proof is the loyal Christians of today who show that his words, that is Jesus' words, have power to improve the thoughts and actions of people even after 2,000 years. So today in this podcast, I'm offering you a few of Baha'u'llah's words for you to consider. And I know that this won't convince you because this podcast is not an absolute proof. But I hope that it gives you enough that you are willing to go to your local library and check out a Baha'i book, or you go on the internet and read one of the books that are on the internet. He wrote over 100, and we have about 10 in English and in hundreds of other world and regional languages. Christians today are looking for the return, and they're talking about prophecies. The problem with prophecies is that they become a proof only after you recognize the messenger based on other proofs. They are not a sufficient proof by themselves. Baha'u'llah said that we have to look at the proofs with the eye of God and not with the eye of a scientist or a mathematician. It would be nice if we could. If it were possible, all the Jews would have become Christians 2,000 years ago, wouldn't they? So even though the prophecies aren't yet approved for you, I'll mention a few from the Book of Certitude. The Glory of God wrote the book while a prisoner of the Turkish government in Baghdad. Here he discusses the prophecies of Jesus' return. The companions and disciples of Jesus asked him concerning those signs that must needs signalize the return of his manifestation. When, they asked, shall these things be? Several times they questioned that peerless beauty, and every time he made reply, he set forth a special sign that should herald the advent of the promised dispensation. To this testify the records of the four Gospels. This wronged one will cite but one of these instances, thus conferring upon mankind for the sake of God such bounties as are yet concealed within the treasury of the hidden and sacred tree. The tree is a reference to true religion. That haply mortal men may not remain deprived of their share of the immortal fruit and attain to a dewdrop of the waters of everlasting life, which from Baghdad, the abode of peace, are being vouchsafed unto all mankind. All right, that was his introduction. Now the Glory of God mentions one of the prophecies from Matthew 24. Immediately after the oppression of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the earth shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. Inasmuch as the Christian divines have failed to apprehend the meaning of these words and did not recognize their object and purpose and have clung to the literal interpretation of the words of Jesus, they therefore became deprived of the streaming grace of the Mohammedan revelation and its showering bounties. The ignorant among the Christian community, following the example of the leaders of their faith, were likewise prevented from beholding the beauty of the King of Glory, inasmuch as those signs which were to accompany the dawn of the Son of the Mohammedan dispensation did not actually come to pass. Thus ages have passed and centuries rolled away, and that most pure spirit hath repaired unto the retreats of its ancient sovereignty. Once more hath the eternal spirit breathed into the mystic trumpet and caused the dead to speed out of their sepulchres of heedlessness and error unto the realm of guidance and grace. And yet that expectant community still crieth out, when shall these things be? When shall the promised one, the object of our expectation, be made manifest, that we may arise for the triumph of his cause, that we may sacrifice our substance for his sake, that we may offer up our lives in his path? In like manner have such false imaginings caused other communities to stray from the infinite mercy of providence and to be busied with their own idle thoughts. Okay, since he's just mentioned Muhammad, I should point out that the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Holy Quran are chapters 1, 2, and 3 of the same book. You can't be a Baha'i if you reject Jesus, and you can't be a Baha'i if you reject Muhammad. Both are messengers of God. I know this is a test for many Christians, but just think of what a test it is for the Jews. We'll have to save Islam for another podcast. For the moment, keep an open mind. Don't think of Islam as what you see in the papers or you hear from your clergy. You wouldn't want people to judge Christianity by what you see Christian countries doing on CNN. Or would you prefer to have them judge Christianity by what the rabbis say about it? It's really important to investigate with your own eyes and ears and keep your minds open. Okay, we'll finish up this prophecy before we go. Here is the explanation from the Glory of God himself about the prophecy of the oppression and the clouds. As to the words, immediately after the oppression of those days, They refer to the time when men shall become oppressed and afflicted, the time when the lingering traces of the Sun of Truth, that's S-U-N, with capital S, and the fruit of the tree of knowledge and wisdom will have vanished from the midst of men, when the reins of mankind will have fallen into the grasp of the foolish and ignorant, when the portals of divine unity and understanding, the essential and highest purpose of creation, will have been closed, when certain knowledge will have given way to idle fancy, and corruption will have usurped the station of righteousness. Such a condition as this is witnessed in this day, when the reins of every community have fallen into the grasp of foolish leaders who lead after their own whims and desire. On their tongue the mention of God hath become an empty name, in their midst his holy word a dead letter. Such is the sway of their desires, that the lamp of conscience and reason hath been quenched in their hearts, and this, although the fingers of divine power have unlocked the portals of the knowledge of God, and the light of divine knowledge and heavenly grace hath illumined and inspired the essence of all created things, in such wise that in each and every thing a door of knowledge hath been opened, and within every atom traces of the Sun hath been made manifest. And yet, in spite of all these manifold revelations of divine knowledge, which have encompassed the world, they still vainly imagine the door of knowledge to be closed, and the showers of mercy to be stilled. Clinging unto idle fancy, they have strayed far from divine knowledge. Their hearts seem not to be inclined to knowledge and the door thereof, neither think they of its manifestations, inasmuch as in idle fancy they have found the door that leadeth unto earthly riches, whereas in the manifestation of the revealer of knowledge they find naught but the call to self-sacrifice. What oppression is greater than that which hath been recounted? What oppression is more grievous than that a soul seeking the truth and wishing to attain unto the knowledge of God should know not where to go for it and from whom to seek it? For opinions have sorely differed, and the ways unto the attainment of God have multiplied. This oppression is the essential feature of every revelation. Unless it cometh to pass, the Sun of Truth will not be made manifest. For the break of the morn of divine guidance must needs follow the darkness of the night of error. For this reason, in all chronicles and traditions, reference hath been made unto these things, namely, that iniquity shall cover the surface of the earth, and darkness shall envelop mankind. Now I'm going to jump ahead about 30 pages to where he talks about the clouds. And now regarding his words, that the Son of Man shall come in the clouds of heaven. By the term clouds is meant those things that are contrary to the ways and desires of men, even as he hath revealed in the verse already quoted, as oft as an apostle cometh unto you with that which your souls desire not, ye swell with pride, accusing some of being impostors and slaying others. These clouds signify in one sense the annulment of laws, the abrogation of former dispensations, the repeal of rituals and customs current amongst men, the exalting of the illiterate faithful above the learned opposers of the faith. In another sense, they mean the appearance of that immortal beauty in the image of mortal man, with such human limitations as eating and drinking, poverty and riches, glory and abasement, sleeping and waking, and such other things as cast doubt in the minds of men and cause them to turn away. All such veils are symbolically referred to as clouds. So the bottom line is that there's a spiritual way of looking at the prophecies, and there's a literal or physical way of looking at them, and the physical way just doesn't work. If you insist that prophecies have to be fulfilled physically, then you need to become a Jew, because that's the reason why they rejected Jesus of Nazareth as their Messiah. I know there's lots of prophecies. If there's one that particularly concerns you, send me an email. Or you can also look at the Emerald Coast Baha'is website. At the bottom of the page is a link to Joel Smith's website of the prophecies of all religions. I'll give you some web addresses in a moment. Now's a good time to find a pencil and paper. Since I can't show you Baha'u'llah's person, and I can't show you his family, the proof I offer you are his words, the words of the glory of God, the words of Baha'u'llah. I wish I could make it easy for you, I really do. I wish there was a black and white mathematical proof that I could offer, but I know better, and so do you. Dear friends, if this kind of spiritual exploration appeals to you, I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast and to the other Baha'i podcasts. We'd really like to hear from you. Challenge us, ask some hard questions. We'd like this to be more of a dialogue than a monologue. This podcast is for you, so help us make it more useful. And remember, you're welcome to join us at any time. You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. Look on the internet at www.baha'i.org for the international site, or www.baha'i.us for the U.S. site. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is www.emeraldcoastbaha'is with an S at the end, .org. EmeraldCoastBaha'is.org. If you'd like to look up other Baha'i podcasts, go to our website, EmeraldCoastBaha'is.org. At the bottom are links to other Baha'i podcasts. I'm Ron Fraser. You can email me at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.